Welcome to the NutraCast, a production by Nutra Ingredients USA. I'm Danielle Masterson. Thank you for joining me here on the NutraCast, where we talk and share insights from inside the nutrition industry. Are sports nutrition brands developing high-quality formulas for female athletes that will actually help them achieve their goals, or are they just continuing to shrink it and pink it? Today's NutraCast examines the sports nutrition world from a female lens and asks the question, do brands truly understand the needs of female athletes? Joining us now is Bodybuilding.com's CEO, Jazz Krzyżalik, also a natural bodybuilder. Thanks for joining us, Jazz.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
And also joining us is Rachel Piron, who is the regulatory compliance team member at bodybuilding.com and strong woman athlete, as well as an advocate for women in strength sports. Thank you both for joining us today. So Rachel, I'll start with you. How common is it to come across quality products for female athletes that will actually help them achieve their weightlifting, their endurance, recovery, and all those goals? Is that something that you have come across over the years?
I started out as a bodybuilder and then kind of fell into strongman later on. I think in general that there are a number of products marketed to women, but in a very generic way with, as you mentioned, the pink wrapping. I think there are a number of products that are available to women, just the marketing is somewhat skewed. And given how it looks, I think the interpretation is that women don't know that the products are for them unless it is pink. So I think the products are there, but I think there is a miss in how those products are marketed and how the education is provided to women and the formulas themselves.
That's a fascinating point. We are so used to looking for those pink bottles that we don't even realize that maybe there is an actual female product out there for us, but we don't even recognize it, even though it's right in front of our face.
Correct. I think there's a number of products and really there's not a huge difference in products, at least now from what we know with studies. There's not a lot of specific studies for female athletes as, you know, a study group. There are certain, you know, differences in maybe iron supplementation or the amounts of protein, but generically there's a lot of products from the supplement space that are used for women just like they are used for men. So to market them as that they have to be pink to be inviting to a female is misleading. And I think it just kind of takes away from the education that women have and is, again, a miss in understanding the female athlete in being more educated than I think they're given credit for when it comes to how the products are marketed.
One thing that you mentioned was the branding and ingredients. What differences are there or should there be in these products? I mean, should hormones be factored in?
Well, I think that plays largely into why it's hard to find products that are studied on women. For products to make substantiated and reliable claims for supplements, they have to have peer-reviewed scientific studies. And there's not a lot of those being done on a female athletic population. Most studies are done on, you know, often diseased populations, which those claims cannot be used for supplements either. So then when you are looking at a female study group that is healthy and they are athletes, there's just not very many studies done on that group of specific people. So studies are very expensive to run. So when you are trying to promote a product that has a very niche group, like a female athlete, it makes it very hard, I think, for companies to invest money into those studies. And then again, from a broader perspective, how do you define athlete? So it can be hard to know how to target those products when the word athlete or the meaning of athlete could be very subjective. Are you talking about an athlete that's a bodybuilder, or are you talking about an athlete that's a college soccer player? I mean, the needs of those just two athletes are going to be different. And then each of those athletes, given their time of training, is going to be different for their supplementation and nutrition needs. So it gets very specific when you start talking about the needs of an athlete, and it's very difficult to, you know, make products with scientific-backed studies for those groups of people.
That is something that comes up pretty often. The idea of being an athlete can be rather intimidating to some people. Is that something that you've come across, Jazz? Do people not want to be pegged athletes even though they work out 6 or 7 days a week?
Yeah, I think that, well, it's just the definition of it. I think you're absolutely right. It's not they don't want to be pegged by it. They don't want to be misunderstood or set the expectation too high, right? They're weekend warriors that work out more than just a weekend type of a thing, right? Even if I consider myself, you know, I've competed for over a decade in natural bodybuilding. And if somebody pulled me aside and asked me if I was an athlete, I probably wouldn't say yes either. Not because I don't want to be one, but I don't want to set the incorrect expectation, right? Rachel touched on a little bit that, you know, when we consider athletes, we think of people that are either scholarshiped at a collegiate level or they're getting paid to do the particular athletic activity, right? That definition is important when we start talking about supplements, right? Even in the earlier comments that you made about, you know, pink it and shrink it, and I think Rachel did a phenomenal job addressing that. If you think about a female population interested in fitness and interested in supplementation as part of their fitness journey, whether it's for the lack of data that we have or just a grossly assumed position by the brands and retailers, the pink it and shrink it is born out of the every female is likely looking for a weight loss management type of a thing. And then everything is always tight and shrink it, and conversation is always about ingredients that drive towards the weight loss. Well, if you really start considering a serious athlete on a female side, it's more than a weight loss. There's the endurance, there's even cognition. There is, you know, a general health and wellness of the body for sustained periods of time. And then obviously energy and recovery concepts come heavily in play when you're discussing an athletic person. So I don't think that there's necessarily that they don't want to be known as athlete. I know I would be, but I would be a little bit wanting to set the expectation correctly that I'm not getting paid for this, nor am I somehow being rewarded for doing it. It's almost like a hobby.
Mm-hmm. Right. Like I still have a 9-to-5. I don't have time to that's be right. some professional athlete. So maybe that's what it is as well.
That's right. And then I was weaving in there that this idea that, you know, if you start really looking at the population, even broader than just athlete, how we just defined it, I think if you really did a thorough research, and I think, you know, Rachel was talking about it from a scientific side, I'll take a spin from call it a marketing or market research side. How many focus groups, how many real surveys of the females are we doing as an industry and asking the right questions? What are you looking for in your supplement? Right. If the assumption is that what women is looking for is a weight loss or beauty product only, then everything is going to kind of be geared towards that category, or it's going to be geared towards a very specific packaging and communication and messaging. But if the scientific method of research was for its efficaciousness at an energy and a recovery level, that what they're looking for is a much more of a sustainability to the body for extended periods of time under various conditions and regimens, then the whole new categories start opening up. You know, very often when you talk about categories in a female supplementation, you start at the multivitamins, then you get into the beauty and sleep, then you get into probiotics, and then cognition and energy. Well, if we're going down the path of talking about athletic females, those categories get much, much broader and much, much wider. I think that very often, you know, pre-workouts are always positioned as in tonality and in the efficaciousness and the loads of the ingredients, heavily towards a male. Even the naming convention of a lot of the products is very male-driven, very jacked and swole type of a language in that space. I think bringing that from, you know, the pre-workout and a very explosive mentality to addressing the true energy for sustainability and performance through the duration of the activity, it would be a good way to start tapping into the audience. And then to Rachel's earlier point, doing a little bit more research around at what levels of caffeine, beta-alanine, betaine, and other ingredients that are commonly found in a pre-workout is the female body best activated, and then structuring that efficaciousness around that. Similarly, in the recovery side, I think female population is already very comfortable in a BCAA's world with the brain chain amino acids. Expanding that category a little bit further and saying what other components of the recovery should there be included in a female regimen that support an ongoing fitness lifestyle versus a one-time event versus a particular event setting, but a really over a longer period of time, I think are massive, massive opportunities in the total available market and a very ample amount of consumers in the female side that are ready to tap into those spaces.
And it is a shame that there isn't very much science was just focused on females, because if you think about it, we are half the population. And I want to say about 75% of females are the ones who are making all the purchasing decisions.
Correct. I think, yeah, that's, as a matter of fact, propensity to consume, if you will, and our better wording on a supplement side is willingness to consider a supplement. If you really think about it, females were ahead in a supplementation game of the males for a long period of time. Anything prenatal, vitamins, and things of that nature have already been common found thing in a supplementation, right? When we think about supplements, particularly in our business, right, we always go straight to the supplements that get you ready for a gym or get you ready for a muscle growth. But supplement category is much, much broader than that. And females have been calcium and prenatals and multivitamins have been a consumer in this category for a long, long periods of time. So introduction into these new categories, if you have a scientific backing behind it, would not be something that a consumer on a female side would reject at all. As a matter of fact, if it's presented to them in a way that leads them to believe that a better life is ahead with a supplement like that, they absolutely would be the first ones to get on board with it.
You made an interesting point because, yes, we all take the prenatals if we're pregnant or perhaps a multivitamin, probiotics, but maybe do we have our blinders on when it comes to the sports nutrition category? Are we just not seeing it because maybe we just subconsciously assume it's for males?
Yeah, I would never put the onus of that back on a consumer. Consumer sees what marketers serve. So, I would never say that a female consumer has any blinders on, but you made a point earlier in conversation with Rachel. If you're walking in the aisle, your eyes naturally have been trained to look for something that is pinking and shrinking. You may walk right by a perfectly good supplement for you, but because you don't have any studies or anybody describing that to you or anybody marketing it to you, you might miss it, right? So I don't think that's on a consumer. I think that's on all of us in the industry to do a much better job of communicating clearly and being certain about the things that we're driving the consumer towards. And, you know, female consumer communication is you know, very good in some categories, you know, out there, you know, clothing lines do, apparel does a phenomenal job, right? Supplement industry is just maybe younger, you know, it started in a male dominated space. And I think we're slowly getting a lot better and growing into it. And I think over time, we will get there. Rachel's made a very valid point, you know, scientific studies are not cheap. So in a lot of cases, you know, brands and retailers, we become very concerned with, you know, time to market and ability to get the product to the audience that's already existing versus growing a new audience. And taking a little bit of time and making an investment in understanding the scientific methodology behind it, and then doing the same thing on a marketing side, will make that consumer see the product.
Rachel?
Yeah, I certainly agree. And I think for myself, it's more of a broader issue, not just with how marketing is done for supplements, but I think education for women broader than products in being the style of training that is presented to them. I think immediately when you're talking about younger females, the focus is heavily on, you know, portrayed on weight loss and staying skinny or maintaining a certain look. And the education just isn't there for weight training. That isn't really provided, I don't think, as well in high school settings. And then moving into a college setting, potentially, you're going to, as a female, gravitate to what is familiar or comfortable for you. So you often see women just start using cardio machines. And there's a lack of education for weight training and strength training in general. So their focus on products are going to be, again, on weight loss and fat loss, opposed to an idea of health in general and potentially being stronger. So I think often women, if you start out in that world, you may accidentally fall into strength training eventually just by, through different experiences. But initially, the presentation to them is such a focus on weight loss that I think the flaw in marketing starts there, and a lack of education with, again, overall health, and that products are broader than just about weight loss. I think there's still, even in 2020, a big misconception that if I drink protein, I'm going to get too big. And the education just needs to be better, you know, provided more so for women to understand what the products are used for. And again, the focus should be on health and through nutrition. And I think society is shifting in that way too, to being more focused on a holistic health and focusing on what food can do for you. And then a reminder that supplements are supplementation for that nutrition when they're needed. And so just continuing that education beyond it being about weight loss and fat loss, and having, you know, more empowerment around strength training. And to be an athlete, you don't have to be a professional athlete. You know, if you're doing a Spartan race or you're doing collegiate sports, to anything, it's a broader definition. And so these products are for you and can be a benefit to you without the daunting ideas that I'm going to get too big and I'm going to get too much muscle.
Rachel, you perfectly described me in my early 20s. I started off on treadmills because that's all I knew. I could figure that out. Too shy to ask somebody to spot me. So I did the cardio for a number of years and thought protein was going to make you fat. So you stick to more of the things that are going to make you more slim. And it's not until I got a little bit older and kind of opened up my mind a little bit and realized that I was completely wrong. You described me perfectly. And I think probably a lot of females could relate to that.
Yeah. Well, Danielle, you know, I just, you know, I remember early days when I first started really, really going to the gym, you know, as part of the competition mentality. Gyms used to not be as welcoming as they are today, either to a brand new female walking in. I mean, cardio equipment was a safe place in a gym. And, you know, now you have this abundance of accessible, different styles that permit exactly what Rachel's talking about, kind of graduating through the through the training regimen and understanding that a total engagement with weight training, cardio, various other forms of training is really the goal. It's not just always sticking with the one singular exercise regimen. You know, if you really think about it, I call it a fitness funnel. You can say that 100% of population on any fitness journey does some form of a training, whether that's, you know, simple walk in a park or true lifting and high intensity working out. And then you have a massive drop down to about 50% of the population that engages in the nutrition as part of their fitness journey. And what I mean by that is true, you know, monitoring and measuring and understanding the macros, understanding the micros, and what am I taking in and how often do I eat and what regimen, right? 50% of the people that are on a fitness journey don't consider that to be part of it. They kind of say, I watch what I eat, but they couldn't really tell you what does that really mean. And then, you know, 20% of the population of fitness journey consider supplement to be part of their fitness journey, right? So if you think about the width of that population, the more broad their experience is at a training level, the better chance of them graduating into the nutrition level and even a greater chance of them graduating into the supplementation level and truly understanding all categories of the supplements that can be helpful in.
It sounds like education is very much needed.
It's fundamental. We like to talk about, you know, our goal as a company has always been, how do we provide people with tools to change their life? And part of the big part of the tool, it's not just a digital subscription service or a product that you buy, but it truly is that education. And that's the wealth of the knowledge on our website, is to get yourself comfortable with fitness. You know, when fitness becomes accessible, easy to understand, and convenient, then 100% of the population will be on it, right? And the goal is to slowly get to that stage where fitness truly is easily accessible, whether it's on your phone or whether it's in a gym or on a piece of equipment that you have at home. It is convenient, meaning I know how to get to it. It is not something that requires a tremendous amount of effort to get to. And it's understandable. It's not scary. I actually know what I need to do for my body. And when you summarize those three things, it all comes down to education.
How big of a role has technology played in all of this?
It's fundamental. If you really think about what's happening in the fitness industry in general, both from the product side and from a digital technology side, the better the technology, the better the consumer experience. The better the consumer experience, the greater the engagement. The greater the engagement, the greater the results. You know, not too long ago, I was asked, hey, what are you guys in the business of? You guys sell supplements? I said, no, we sell results. Anybody can come in looking for a magic pill. Anybody can come in for one and done type of a mentality. But it's the customer that's truly educated and knows what they're using, and through our help has put themselves on a path to results. That's a retained customer. That's a loyal customer. And they stick around. And not only do they stick around, they look to graduate to the next stage. If you're providing results, technology is fundamental. Without it, how are people supposed to track and have that accessibility? And really, how do you make it convenient? That's what technology really is enabling.
Yeah, it's a convenience, especially when it comes to a lot of those videos that we watch on Instagram. I notice that there's mostly females that are posting those videos. Is that something that you've noticed too?
I think this is one of those things where technology is really interesting, Danielle. The reason you see that is because probably your searches and categories and things that you look alike and your cookies lead to that being fed to you. You don't see the totality of Instagram, right? Mine might be completely opposite of that based on interests and stuff like that. But see, even there, that can be a very positive thing, that machine learning is telling them that Danielle is probably interested in a female workout videos. So you keep being able to see that on an ongoing basis. So based on your preferences, that's what you're seeing on Facebook and Instagram and anywhere else.
It's a good point to make. Thank you for that. So I feel like the female market has come a long way in terms of gyms, making them more welcoming to females. Mm-hmm. The education is getting better. Supplements are getting better. The science is getting better. But what about COVID? Has that stalled the female market?
It's stalled the market as a whole. Look, fitness, you know, obviously travel, entertainment, service sector has been impacted heavily by it. But we don't ever think about the fact that gyms were closed for 2 months. And in a lot of areas, they remain closed, or they're open on a very limited basis, or they're open and you're supposed to wear a mask while you're, you know, doing HIIT cardio training. I don't know if you ever tried it, but, you know, give it a shot. It makes HIIT cardio much more challenging than it was before. Yeah, so it had a tremendous impact, right? I mean, we saw that as the gym closure started. You see the certain categories, even of supplements, you know, pre-workouts and others, not be taken. Because when you're working out at home, it's just not quite the same level of exertion. And if you look at even the workout regimens that we have for at-home goers, they're great for sustainability and great for staying fit. It's usually not an hour and a half workout of very heavy weights in a gym or anything like that, right? So you have a very different perspective. If you remember my funnel, 100% of the people on a fitness journey do some form of training. When a gym is closed, that gives a first inclination to a consumer to say, well, heck, I'll just wait for it to open. You know, some percentage will graduate to working out at home. Some percentage will stay on it, but a significant percentage decides to use that as it's my moment in time not to be motivated.
Rachel, have you seen any trends emerge?
That's a good question. I think time will tell somewhat. I think some people are using the time to try new things like at-home workouts. I mean, you obviously saw a big run on purchases for at-home equipment. So I think more and more the trends are moving toward convenience. And that, again, it's a little bit different when you're talking about an athlete in a specific sport because their life has been turned upside down somewhat. If someone's training a specific competition, a bodybuilding show, a Spartan race, all of that has been canceled. So it's causing like a major shift in adaptation to training. And I think in a good way, it's forcing people to kind of adapt and try new things. And maybe they'll fall into something new that they wouldn't have otherwise. But it's presenting a new challenge of, you know, you could potentially lose fit focus. And that can easily happen when what your routine that you're so used to. And so if that end goal has been put on a to be determined status, it can make it really hard to keep your training consistent. But on the alternative side, people have turned to training at home, maybe spending more time with their families, being outside, being more active with their kids. So I think you see both sides of that. And it'll just be interesting I think people after we get through this are going to be looking forward to those events. And there'll be a huge spike in trying to find a competition or a marathon to sign up for because, you know, I'm ready to get back on track. I mean, people want that consistency and that regimen in not only with their training, but their supplementation plays into that. So especially as an athlete, you are more focused. Athletes are consistent purchasers because they follow that consistent program. You know, they're very regimented. So I think it'll be interesting in a few months to look back and see how people have progressed in their training, what they're doing differently, and then again, looking forward to those events being rescheduled.
That's a great point that Rachel made, Danielle. I think I would also say that, you know, what we've also observed is a great deal of focus by a consumer on immunity and general health. So, you know, the vitamin sector, the green sector, the general immunity sector has definitely been, you know, on an upswing because of the COVID. I think we've seen that. And to Rachel's earlier point, it'll be interesting to see, is that an adrenaline moment in time, or is this something that a population is not going to get very conscious about on an ongoing basis and be more in a preventive mode than a curing mode?
Yeah, I'm curious to see what will actually stick too. And I think, as you mentioned, I'm one of those people who are I'm not completely striving for my goal anymore. It's sort of to be determined because for many of us as a mom, as a parent, we don't have childcare right now. So how are we going to get out? Yeah. I was used to dropping my kids off at the gym daycare and doing my routine. That's out the door. So even when the gyms open back up, will they have daycare? Who knows?
No, you're absolutely right. I think Rachel used a really good word, the breaking of the routine, right? Once the routine is broken, you either form a new routine or you wait for your old routine to reemerge. And, you know, you kind of just described for yourself, you're kind of waiting for the old routine to reemerge. And if it doesn't, then you either are really deciding to change the routine and make something new out of it, or you're falling off the journey altogether. And I don't think that's the desired outcome. So again,
absolutely
going back to education. Yeah.
Absolutely not. It's summer.
Yeah. And provide those convenient ways that, okay, you know, hey, look, you have a 20-minute at-home workout that will keep you going, you know, on a daily basis without having to sacrifice a tremendous amount of time driving, and it doesn't require a lot of equipment. So why don't we use that and create a new routine, and then we'll build off of that baseline instead of stopping the baseline that already existed.
Yeah, so much to think about, so many different factors. I think we all are wondering what's going to stick around, what's going to change, what will things look like, say, a year from now?
Definitely. It's something that, you know, from both just a fitness enthusiast factor and then obviously from a business side, we're very much constantly monitoring and engaging consumer and asking the right questions. At the end of the day, assumptions are only, you know, the beginning. You can make your hypothesis, but then go test it out in the market and ask the people.
So looking ahead, what do you think is going to change, if anything, for the female market? And what can the female consumer, the female athlete expect in the next few years?
I think a couple of pieces. I think we're going to see a breadth of categories open up. I think we're going to see a lot more of the generally male-viewed categories start to emerge and become a mainstay, everyday part of it. I think we're also going to see a lot more, to reach those earlier points, a lot more training regimens that don't rely solely on cardio as part of the fitness journey. That will always be there. Everybody should always have cardio as part of their general fitness regimen. But you're going to see definitely an emergence, a lot more of weight training, a lot more of HIIT type of functions, a lot more of maybe possibly even powerlifting type of a direction, but not for bulk, but truly for health because of the total benefit around it. I think I see that. And then I think general categories, overall wellness, particularly on the cognitive side, I think we're going to see a lot more of that coming out. You just described yourself, Danielle, earlier at daycare, and I got to drop off a kid to go work out and stuff like that. There's a mental exhaustion at the end of the day that prevents you from wanting to do a physical activity, right?
Yeah.
Look, my wife lives the same life, so I completely understand what you're describing. Having that, you know, cognitive kind of a calmness about you, if you will, is something that I think is going to be a big category that's going to emerge and drive value in the female sector.
What are your thoughts on that? Anything to add to that, Rachel?
I think Jazz covered that pretty well. I think just more and more exposure as social media continues to grow. You know, I'm hoping that education becomes a bigger part of that, and we're teaching women, especially at a younger age, the right things, you know, to focus on strength and overall health. And, you know, you see trends, you see more and more companies moving away from artificial sweeteners and different products like that, synthetic ingredients. So there's a shift in the industry somewhat. It's maybe small and slow and maybe isn't impacting specifically the sports nutrition side as much, but it will continue to shift in that way. I think people are paying more attention more now than they ever have to products, the supply chain, and what products they're putting into their bodies. And so I think that education side is going to just continue to grow, hopefully.
Absolutely. And before I let you go, something big may have happened in recent weeks.
Yeah, we changed ownership about a month ago. Yeah, you can consider that a big thing for sure. there's no doubt about that. We're very pleased with the outcome. As a management team, I think that we're very well aligned with the new ownership in terms of the trajectory and the things that we want to do. There's a great deal of understanding of the customer and the community from the new ownership team, and they really are focused on rekindling that flame with our customers and driving the value of the community going forward. So we're pretty excited about that. I think it's one of the things that once in a while in your lifetime, you have an opportunity to have this kind of a congealment of the management's thoughts with the ownership. And we got lucky to be in that position.
Yeah, it sounds like everybody is really happy with the acquisition. So congratulations on that.
Thank you.
Jazz Kershawlik and Rachel Piron, both from bodybuilding.com. Thank you so much for coming on the NutriCast today.
Yeah, our pleasure. Thank you for having us.
Thanks again.
If you like what you just heard, you can always subscribe to the NutriCast on iTunes. And be sure to catch the upcoming sports nutrition webinar on July 8th. I'll be hosting it alongside an all-star team of panelists. I certainly hope you can join me. For all your Nutra-related content, be sure to head to NutraIngredients-USA.com. Thank you so much for joining me today. I'm Danielle Masterson. As always, I'll catch you here on the NutriCast next week.